podcast?
Movie podcast.
Are you getting this?
To not make it so funny that you laugh.
Welcome to the Movie Podcast, everybody. Episode number 161. I'm your host, Tiggs. And with me, as always, are Russ.
I'm Nasty Russ.
And Peter.
I guess witness me again.
Oh boy. Okay, there we go, man. So here we are. It is the middle of, or the beginning of a heat wave in New York City. And it is really hot. And that's all I got for you right now. So what better way to beat the heat than to go hang out in some movie theaters that are cool because the ACs are running and the power hasn't gone out yet. And that's me jinxing all of New York City.
Not Westchester.
That's true. Oh, crap. Well,
start out with a movie that you can only watch at home.
Only watching at home. Movie Pass. Movie Crash. The documentary on HBO Max about Movie Pass. I kind of enjoyed this, and it made me want to. So I enjoyed it, and then I ended up hating Movie Pass. I mean, the whole point, you know, to do end up hating what Movie Pass became, and then kind of being just like, man, I hope the new MoviePass succeeds.
It really made me, like, really remember a time where I straight up saw everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like,
and, you, and if you really want to remember it, you can go back and listen to our first episodes of the podcast where we saw everything, too.
I still see a decent amount of movies, but there are certain things that aren't for me that I just bypass for time. MoviePass made me see legitimately every single movie. And it was unbelievable. And having every theater open to you and not being on the rails of AMC was so, it was so fun. I miss it. I miss it so much. And this movie made me hate, white people. But, you know, white-haired business guys.
Yeah. Right.
And you know what I'm talking about when I say white-haired business guys. Like, those guys fucking suck. They're not really good at anything other than, like, being at an event, shaking hands, and seeming important. These people just bring talking. No actual value to anything. And MoviePass was such an awesome thing that, so, like, a industry saver, and it got turned into this fucking thing that sucked. I still remember. I also distinctly remember the end where it was like, oh, you can't see a movie. You can't. All that Mission Impossible shit. This is the movie. Oh, we're doing it. And then it's like, you couldn't even fucking see it for like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if we were to search our inboxes, I'm pretty sure that there is a email sent from you, Russ, at some point being just like, did you guys sign up for MoviePass? And that was the first time I heard about it, and I immediately went and signed up for it. And it had to be like right near the beginning of us like starting to record the podcast.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just like everything, would go and see everything, went to like, you know, the Kaufman cinemas all the time. And I'm trying to remember the first movie that I went to when I went to Kaufman, and it just didn't work. And I was like, what's going on right now? I don't know what to do.
Because you thought you were entering forever.
Yeah.
And it really quickly reminded you that it was not, in fact, forever. It was really just like a year and a half of pure bliss. It was so sick.
It's interesting that like the way that they have it here is it seemed like there was a couple of really good years, but I don't remember it being as long as they kind of pose here. Or maybe we just got into it later.
Well, but I remember we were later adopters. We were the $10 a month
people. Yeah.
It was $50 for a long time, and I always kind of thought about it, but never committed, even though, honestly, $50 is probably what it should cost.
Yeah. And we talked about that constantly. Like, as it was, like, failing, it was, like, begging, like, please, charge me more money for this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I do understand, like, promotional rates and stuff like that just to build a large user base.
Yeah.
But that thing should have gone to like, it should have been an introductory rate for a year, and then it should have gone up to 20, and then it should have gone up to 25, And people, if you kept raising the price gradually, you would have eventually, you would have lost some people, but you're not going to lose everybody because it's still so fucking worth it. A movie right. in the city, well, now, is like $22.
No, if you see two movies and it was a $50 thing, it paid for itself regardless. Even back then, it was three movies a month. You were making it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, yeah. there was no reason not to just raise it. And as we've seen with like, you know, AMC, the Regal subscription, Alamo as a subscription, they're all at least like $30 right now, right? Like I'm sure. I know the
AMC
the Alamo,
I think is the cheapest right now because I still have it and I get like $25.99 taken out of my account.
And that's what? That's three movies a week, right?
Three movies a week.
Any format.
Yeah.
Any format.
Alamo with none of the bullshit fees and stuff, which is pretty cool.
Alamo is $30 a month, but it's every day. You get one a day.
Super worth it. You're not going to go to Alamo every day.
No. Why would? I mean, and if you do, you're going to spend so much money on food. Like, right. what the hell? Yep. Yeah.
And I think they know that. They're like, no one's going to do this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a real bummer moment of all the bummer moments in the movie in which like they pitch it to AMC and yeah. AMC's pretty into it and look like it's about to really pop off, and this is before like all the horrible white men come to lead them into the ground, and AMC changes CEOs.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And yes. they yeah, pull yeah, yeah. out. And it's right at that moment that you kind of even before everything happens that you're just like. Even if this works, all of these theaters are going to do their own.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they need.
And it's like you can be first or you can be like, I don't want to say best because AMC isn't necessarily better, but we're going to watch you figure out how this works. And then as soon as you show us how this works, we're bigger. We have significantly more money than you. We will just scale it to our business, to our company, and you will go under.
Yeah, and MoviePass could still work in a lot of other places. It's a little expensive right now if you try to get it in New York City, and it's only like three movies a month, which I'm sure for some people is fine. For me, you can't do premium formats.
So that's why I didn't know. Okay.
A-list is always going to be the one for me.
Yeah.
That is really nice, honestly.
Yeah. And you know, we live in a city with so many AMC theaters, and we have, you know, something like the Lincoln Square, which has like all the limited release opening weekend stuff. So, but if you lived in a town that had one big chain theater and then another little art house thing, and you wanted to do both of them, like a MoviePass mm-hmm. is perfect.
Yeah, no, totally. No. Yeah. For New York, any of them will really work for the most part, but there are significantly more AMCs around.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's great. As you said, it's a pretty enjoyable documentary. It's of that like modern ilk of like very low effort docs.
Right.
That's just talking heads over like randomly selected footage. It was fun to see all the people that they interviewed who were just MoviePass subscribers doing all the things that I did with it.
Yes.
Those people felt like my people.
Yeah. It was fun. If you guys remember you also watched the documentary, so you, of course, you remember when the period in which you had to take a picture of your ticket stub.
Oh, yep. That was annoying as hell.
And they were.
That's basically when I stopped. Was just like, yeah. this is now too much.
Yeah.
It was like they were throttling you in real time, like as a human.
Right.
I was like, I know when data gets throttled, but I'm like, you're literally throttling the human being that is me.
And they were like, well, and a lot of people were sending a middle finger. And I was like, oh, that's me. A lot of people are me.
Yes. Like, I think that, you know, on like the kind of the scale of the HBO documentaries that I've watched or we've talked about, I do like Class Action Park like more than this one. Specifically, honestly, because I thought Gethard brought a lot of personality and like funniness to that whole thing, as well as just kind of like all of the folk tales you heard about Action Park and then seeing it and being just like, oh, they were real. That's crazy. and then like living through MoviePass and me just like, yeah, I was a part of this crap and it sucked. But it's totally worth watching. And honestly, if you've got HBO Max, which, you know, probably Check it out.
Old movie podcast episodes, and it was like the summer in which it's a big reason why you can hear us talk about the Superfly remake.
Oh yeah. I remember seeing the Superfly remake. Oh my gosh.
Or why we all saw, most of us maybe saw that Gabrielle Union Breaking In action film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we probably all would have said Uncle Drew just because of the buzz was so good.
Loved Uncle Drew. I own Uncle Drew, and I think about Uncle Drew weekly.
I'm trying to
remember seeing that pretty drunk with, I think, Peter.
Yeah. We should listen to the podcast. I'm sure we talk about it there. I want to say I saw at least like two of the Saws with MoviePass. Probably Searching, I think I may have seen with MoviePass. The second friend request.
MoviePass was dying or kind of kicking up into gear when Jigsaw came out. Reset attempt. Because I remember I had spent the previous 2 days watching all the Saws because I hadn't seen most of them. Because I was like, I watched 8 movies just because I knew my MoviePass could get me into Jigsaw.
Yeah. So much good for the industry. Well, come on. What's going on here? All right. Let's keep it going here. Let's move on to we've got a bunch of these that actually not as many as I thought that only one of us had seen. I'm going to quickly talk about The Strangers Chapter 1 and say it's fine. I guess it's not great. It's crazy that they filmed 3 movies at once. Like, I don't know. This is what Rennie Harlan. Rennie Harlan joint being just like, I can do a Maxine X, you know, like type of thing and just film 3 movies at once, even though Maxine wasn't done with the same film. And I guess I'm kind of interested to see where it goes with the next movie. But at the same time, I spent most of the movie not being super scared, but more just like rooting for the strangers to end the series. Be like, well, if there's 3 movies, like, and these are the people, like, if we just end it right now, it'd be fine.
I assume this one is just like the original. It's just 2 people and they get murdered by other people.
Yeah.
So where do you heighten this for a trilogy?
Okay. So we could spoil a little bit about it, I guess. So it's 2 people basically getting going for like a house. Their car breaks down. They talk to some locals and they're just like, oh, yeah, you can go stay at this house. House obviously gets attacked by strangers. Some other things happen. You know, the person ends up being very injured, ends up in a hospital, cut to black. End chapter 1.
What? It's not even a film?
No. This is very obviously
chapter
like...
chapter 1.
Yeah, it's chapter 1. This is so Rennie Harlan has said that after all 3 are released separately, there will be 1 supercut of the entire thing released as well.
That's infuriating.
Yeah.
I hate that so much.
Yeah. I'm glad we all agree. But something that we didn't hate that much would be Furiosa.
Apparently the world,
the world hated it,
couldn't give a less of a fuck about it. And I just don't get it.
It's so good. Go see it.
It's really good. It's really, really good. It takes a little while to get in. I didn't know what to expect going in.
Yeah.
Because there's a part of me that felt like the first half of this movie was just like, oh, this is like that 3,000 Years of Longing. He learned some lessons from that. And then the second half of it was like, here's Fury Road. And that was cool. But everything that it builds up to pays off really well. So like, even though it feels like you're just watching people like talk for a very long time and seeing all the setups of these characters and who they are and like, you're like, oh, I know that person from Fury Road and everything, that once it finally like kicks into high gear, it just feels like so high octane.
Yeah.
It just, I don't understand what didn't sell people.
Yeah.
Like where, what was like, nah, I'm out. Anya Taylor-Joy is a pretty big.
She's huge.
Like up and coming. I don't even want to say up and coming because she's here. Actress. Chris Hemsworth doing a huge, big fucking role. like huge a role that he can really sink his teeth into and like show all of his charisma and his shit. And it's fucking George Miller. Like, yeah. What was so appealing about Fury Road that is right. not appealing about Fury yeah. Road?
That's the question, is why did people go out to Fury Road and not this? And that's yeah. what I don't like. That doesn't make that. That's where I kind of lose it.
Well, it's about they kept going out to Fury Road. Fury Road
right.
didn't I don't like open better than this, but it also like people kept going to see it. And this
by the second shocked. Week, Garfield beat this.
Yeah.
And it came out the same day.
yeah. And it's really dropped like a stone. It just doesn't make any sense to me that this isn't even going to hit like 100 million domestic.
No.
I don't know if it's – do people just not like the Mad Max saga? They don't want to see like this sort of completely attached movie. And I think this movie makes Fury Road feel like not a complete film. And no knock to Fury Road, obviously, but this movie does this weird prequel thing that it almost makes the other movie feel like just a short little epilogue to this.
It's like reverse Dune. Like it's like the opposite feeling I have from Dune 2 with Furiosa. And I think Fury Road is like objectively like damn near a perfect film. And I like Fury Road probably a little bit better than Furiosa. But it's like, this is the substance to Fury Road's style. Like, maybe should this have come out first with a smaller budget?
If they could have in some way, yeah.
But I just don't know that this movie would have been made. Or just like, I don't think this movie would have been made if... I just don't think this movie would have been made without Mad Max being in it at all. Like,
right.
I think they kind of had to do what they did. But if the goal is to expand this world, then we do have to get a little away from Max.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And
there's some part of it that, and it's not an exact because it's not a prequel, but like the raid where it's like, here's this self-contained, you start like right at the beginning and then you just kind of go through and then it's over as soon as they like exit the building. And then the raid 2, where it's just like this huge, much bigger scope and like just tells like a much larger story that basically takes place immediately afterwards. That it feels like there was an appetite for this to be a thing. Was it that like it should have just been like Furiosa, a Fury Road, like the next Fury Road instead of putting Mad Max on it?
Yeah. And it's like I don't think 10 years is long.
It's a long time, yeah.
A movie that I thought had a better, like, legacy. This isn't, like, coming out with, like, a sequel to, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, anything. Of the 9 million examples that you could think of like, a long-delayed sequel.
Real Steel 2.
Yeah, but those movies don't have, like, the legacy to attach.
Is that happening?
Like, no.
I'd see it.
I'd see it right away. Are you kidding me?
So I don't get it. As you said, it's completely confounding what turned people off on this, and not even like in terms of the reviews, right? Like people really like it because it's very good, obviously.
Yeah, everyone who sees it likes it. So
yeah.
What is keeping people, especially a movie that was designed to see on a screen? This is not something where I would be like, oh, I'll wait till it streams. This is this is a movie to go to the theater for. And I get that a lot of people will just wait, you know, because 3 weeks you can get it on Vudu or whatever. But this isn't that. So, like, why aren't people seeing this movie?
Well, so that's going
to
be.
I don't want to chalk it up to like the general like box office doldrums, because I don't believe it's just that.
Not when Kong versus Godzilla makes, like, you know, infinite money.
It made more than any other one of those fucking MonsterVerse movies. And I watched it 2 days ago. It's dog shit.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not.
It's the worst one. And I didn't like King of the Monsters.
And something we're going to talk about soon, like Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was number 3 this weekend. It's holding pretty well. It's like percent droppage is not high at all, and people are going to see it because I don't think it has any sort of like announcement for when it's going to be on streaming. Yep. I don't know if this being like Warner Brothers or HBO and people are like, oh, I know this is going to be back soon. But that's because it's 10 years old. Like, what? Where are all like the 12-year-old boys who were too young for Fury Road?
Yep.
Heard about it. Finally got to see it. Where were they?
Yeah.
Now that they're
long was Fury 20s. Road.
Fury Road was a little shorter. It was like under 2 hours or 2 hours exactly. This is a little over two.
This is like close to 2:30, right? Like that's the only thing.
It's like 2:15, 2:20. But like even Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is like an interesting movie to juxtapose this with, because granted, it's only been probably 8 years since the last seven or 8 years.
Still
since the
a
last
long time.
Planet of the Apes. But you're basically rebooting a franchise with
we're into Kingdom all, of the Planet of the Apes now.
With completely new characters. Like they didn't even like when it's 300 years later, not like there's only talk of Caesar. Like,
well, it starts with like his funeral, basically, right? Like that's the opening scene.
So that would be like starting Furiosa with Mad Max dying,
right?
And at least the way the Planet of the Apes movies are put together. And now, granted, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was a lot of fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It might be my doesn't say much, but my third favorite of these movies.
Of the new ones or of all of them?
Of the new ones.
Okay.
Maybe even second.
I really like War.
War is good, but like War is the one I watch least. I will watch Dawn of the Planet of the Apes until I am dead.
Dawn rips. Yeah, so somehow Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is making almost $100 million more domestic and more than $200 million more worldwide. It came out 2 weeks earlier.
It's the same runtime, basically. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
The only difference is it's PG-13 and Furiosa's R, but.
How much is that a difference now? Are people not, are parents not bringing like under 18-year-old people to R-rated movies like they used to?
No, theaters, still
do they even check? Like, I mean, in all honesty,
AMC checks, but when it's an R-rated movie, and I'm like, dude, I'm 40.
All right, we get it. You look young. You look young. We understand. Jeez.
Yeah, and it's just like I remember seeing Deadpool 2 with somebody brought their 4-year-old.
Yeah.
So what is different about this? Why are kids just not going to the movies with their parents? So R-rated movies that are only for violence, not getting that 13 to 17-year-old audience like they used to.
I don't know. I mean, did Kingdom eat Furiosa's lunch? Like, was it just like during this month I will see one thing and then that's it?
It came out so much. It was the big. It was the real summer kickoff, if you don't count Fall Guy, and it had a full 2 week head start. The summer is designed to withstand a big movie every 2 weeks, or a big movie every week if it's very different than the movie that came before it. So the only thing that Furiosa had to worry about was Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And whatever it would make in its third week.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't make nothing makes sense. Both movies are good. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is really enjoyable. I think it had the best villain since Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
That I don't even know how much he's a villain.
Right.
Yeah. So is it? Because Furiosa comes out on a holiday weekend. I don't think holiday weekends are doing as well as they used to.
I think people are having a lot more get-togethers and they're seeing friends and family, and movies are kind of falling by the wayside. Even me, I will wait till like the Monday or the last day of a long weekend to actually go to the movies now. I don't even bother.
Yeah, back in 2020, we did a whole podcast about Will Smith and July 4th. So I don't. Our holiday. So if holidays aren't working anymore, and the news cycle about box office is so antagonistic.
Yeah.
It almost seems like they want this to happen.
Yes. So can you no longer release big, should be tentpole action films or what adventure, whatever sort of like R-rated, anything big? Can you not release those on holiday weekends anymore? Because the normal audience just not doing movies as their holiday weekend plan, do they all then look at the headlines or, and it's just like, well, I guess I'll wait for it?
Well, I think that's the possible. Real test will be A Quiet Place, because that's June 28th. Yeah. And they kind of split 4th of July. It could either be that June 28th or it can be July 3rd, which is Despicable Me, which will definitely crush because that's a kid's movie.
That's going to be insane. Yeah.
And yeah, I feel exactly. like Illumination kids movies are fucking bulletproof. But it's interesting because, like, yeah, in case you haven't been alive for 15 years. But like even Mario 2 just like announced its release date. And I was like, oh, they must be taking like Memorial Day or the start of the summer or July. No, they took April 3rd.
Huh. Yeah, such a weird date. That's a really weird date for Mario.
Yeah, especially considering that movie made like $1.5 billion. I thought they were going to like, all right, we've proven ourselves now. We're going to take one of the big dates. And they fucking didn't.
Yeah, and that's weeks before Easter next year. So it's not like they're trying to hit for, like, school holidays.
Oh, they're just saying, fuck it, April. We know you'll see it.
Yeah.
And if that's where we're going with release dates, and they're just saying we don't really care about those traditional dates anymore, we'd rather spread shit out over the course of the year, yeah. I think that's ultimately better for me.
Right.
But worse for, you know, cinemas at large, because you tend to, Barbenheimer kind of shows you, when you have two fucking big things in the theater at one time, it tends to draw people in for other stuff. Like the people who don't get tickets ahead of time and just walk to the theater, but they're there already, so they just see something else, even though the movie they wanted to see was sold out. Like, those people still exist.
Yeah.
I find them to be insane.
right.
But I think where we are now is like, it doesn't really matter. No one cares about when a movie is released anymore. And I think that that is a net positive for the consumer and a net negative for the theater.
Yeah. So just to the actual, an actual kingdom. Sort of kingdom. Kingdom?
K-O-T-T-O-A-O-T-A.
Yeah. I liked the first third of it when it's just the young apes and their sort of colony, the bird people apes.
Yeah,
I like the bird people apes. Yeah,
my one complaint would be, since there's very little sign language in this movie, like the last couple, like all the apes are talking a little bit, it's a little bit more distracting. How the CGI is a little bit more distracting. Like, I really liked how Andy Serkis played Caesar. And any other ape that talked, you could clearly see there was a strain on the ape.
Yeah.
And now that that's gone,
that's true.
Yeah. Now that that's gone, it's a little bit more difficult to make it look like the ape is so fluently speaking English. As we said before, it enjoyable. I'm not hugely a fan of where it seems this new trilogy is headed, would be my biggest complaint.
I'm interested to see like what the next movie is at this point, and kind of like how it goes. The end of this movie and kind of where it leaves off for the start of this, you know, next trilogy, I think could be interesting. I think there are interesting bits about kind of like the next war, I guess. Overall, I like the CGI. I definitely felt a lot of heartbreak when that net was cut.
We didn't see a corpse. He could still be alive.
Yep. It's true, and I fully expect it. But
because he was alive.
I do feel like this is probably squarely third for me in like the new reboot, but yeah. I'm interested to see what happens, honestly.
And, I think the third is very good. It's not a bad place to be when you consider like so much of that of the most recent trilogy is like fucking great.
Yeah.
So totally. If you're third, that means you're kind of already a little better than one of those movies, and they were all good. I really liked this. I love the young ape. I love the bird colony. I loved Proximus Caesar as a fucking just concept. I did love that idea of like taking a figure and using and twisting it to your own ends. Very Jesus-y. And I guess that's why they had to go so far in the future, because you had to create different Caesar-based philosophies, and that could only happen through the telephone of generations. So really enjoyed it. People are seeing it, so it'd be stupid to say go see it. And since it's owned by Disney, Disney doesn't fuck around and drop their shit online at all. They wait.
No.
This probably won't come out as a streamable entity until September.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I am actively annoyed that I can't see Young Woman in the Sea yet, because I really want to see it for whatever reason.
Go to the one theater that it might be in.
It's showing at the Alamo at like 12:30 every day, and I'm like, come on.
Yeah. It was very nice to see William H. Macy out from Shameless.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm finally back on the big screen where he belongs. Little weirdo.
All right.
So freaked out when I saw him. I was like, oh my God.
It was so jarring when he showed up. Yeah. Oh man. All right. Well, let's do two singles. Pete, tell us about In a Violent Nature.
In a Violent Nature, if you don't know about it, it's a very much a nature-y, slow art film about a slasher. Okay. So it's kind of like, it's like watching, it's very much a Friday the 13th sequel. It feels like Friday the 13th, like part 4. But we don't see or hear anything that the killer is not there. So most of this movie is just a shot from the back of the killer, like trudging through the woods. So we only overhear conversations once they get closer to like the teen character kind of stuff.
Like hardcore Henry.
Yeah.
Intrigued.
It's really well made. The acting, the ADR and the acting in the script is pretty bad. The kills are very fun though. And it's just a neat way of doing a movie that you've definitely seen before if they really changed how it worked. So it gives us this kind of like fun new spin. The ending gets a little, tries to like shoot for deepness and a point. Okay. And I haven't really decided where I fall on whether that was successful or not. I couldn't tell if it was like, you didn't make the movie you think you did, or actually I should rewatch it because you kind of hit this. But once it goes to Shudder, I would say check it out.
Okay. Yeah, no, I want to. I've heard good things about it overall. And the premise is pretty interesting. So
yeah, just be prepared for a lot of just shots of someone walking through the woods and the repeated sound effect of like crunch, 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 crunch.
Hmm.
But slower, more menacing.
Crunch. Yeah. Crunch. Got it. Russ, how is Babes?
Yeah. Babes is good. I think they... I hate when they put fucking taglines on posters. They call this the Bridesmaids of Baby Making. It's not that at all.
Okay. Like, I didn't even see that tagline, but that's funny.
That's annoying as fuck because it brings you in. It's very much not that at all. It is very funny, but it is not like that kind of comedy. It's okay. Really more like Pamela Adlon channeling a little bit of like a Albert Brooksy type of film in Alana Glazer and Michelle Buteau. It's really about their relationship. It's, having a baby is just a backdrop, but it's really just about the complexity of like getting older and having your relationships change with friends.
This sounds almost depressing.
No, it's not. It's not depressing. It's just real. Like, Penny, get out of here. It's, you know, like
awesome babe.
People get older, they move away, they have kids, their priorities shift, and what that does to a relationship that is based on a certain dynamic. I just think it was just really good at showing the shifting dynamics of friendships as people hit their like 30s, 40s, and or have kids and have other priorities. And having a baby is just a way to show that. But it's funny, it's cute, it's one of those New York-y kind of movies.
And into it.
Yeah, it's like nice to look at. It's a good, it's enjoyable, and it's not overtly ha-ha funny all the time, but it is very cute.
Nice. Yeah, I want to check that out. I don't know when I don't think that's in theaters anymore that I've seen, or it might still be in like one or two.
Yeah, it's probably getting like one or two show times in a random theater.
Yeah.
But.
All right, let's move on to I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah, did anyone else see her first film, We're All Going to the World's Fair?
I did not, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, so I like that movie. That movie felt pitched to a generation younger than me because it was very much about like internet isolation, but more of in like the 2020s in a way that I'm entirely too old for.
Yeah.
So I was shocked that this movie felt completely of a different generation.
Yeah, for sure.
And an understanding of that, that really, I really, really enjoyed, even with, you know, the trans sort of narrative of it and the closeted sort of narrative of it is not something that exactly speaks to my personal experience whatsoever. I still really liked what this movie was doing.
Yeah. I totally agree. I was really enthralled with this movie from beginning to end. I like from the second it started to like the reveals it. And this is like obviously an oversimplification of all like the you know, the text and subtext that is going on throughout the movie. But like it is about, you know, like a Are You Afraid of the Dark type of TV show. It feels like a very long episode of that to me in a lot of ways, where like if there was an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark about them talking about a haunted TV show of some sort, like I could have seen it being very much this, to the point of like, yeah, when that kid gets trapped in the pinball machine and then he's like in the mall at the end and then there's a big pinball coming after him from the top of the escalator. Love it. I can't go back and watch those shows, and it is exactly why, from like everything that they kind of dive into and talk about here, this is a chilling and frightening movie, but it's not outright scary.
No,
except maybe that point where Pete and Pete are staring from like the sidewalk, which is like a nightmare that I was like, what the hell is going on right now? I think I've seen this before.
I really enjoyed this movie. It suffered from my immensely high expectations.
Yeah.
Sure. And for a movie to be, it's not inaccessible by any means, but I really didn't know anything. I tried to know as little about it going into it as possible. Because I saw a little bit of the trailer and I was like, this is vibes that are up my fucking alley. I'm just going to go into it cold. And I feel like this is like the kind of shit Justice Smith should be doing. And yeah. Bridget Lundy Payne is somebody who anytime they're in something, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So this movie had me by virtue of I was in before I even got there. Right. But I did really enjoy it. It made me think a lot more than I thought I was going to have to. Mm-hmm. So seeing it like super early when I was tired definitely didn't help. But it's one of the few movies that has like earwormed itself into my brain because I think about it all the time. Think about it. The soundtrack is fucking impeccable.
Oh, it's so good.
I listen to that sound. It's one of the few things I listen to. I had no idea Fred Durst was going to be up in this joint. And it's just really, really good. It's speaking, it's pitching on two different levels. There's all the allegorical stuff. And then there's just the outright, the movie that it is. And neither makes sense by itself. And I don't know that it completely makes sense together, but they definitely make more sense together than they do separate. So you just have to take it for what it is. Like a Donnie Darko-ish, not to compare it, but like a Donnie Darko-ish sort of thing where it's like, is this happening or is it not? And doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it again because I kept trying to like get ahead of the mystery in some way. Bigger
that was
going
up was killing me.
And you have to get that out of your head. It's really not looking to draw any strong conclusion on what this TV show was, and it just settles into how something that you've memory hold can affect you and warp your own perception of what it was. That it does that, as I said, you don't really, there's nothing to figure out.
Yeah. And I think that's what I liked about it. I think I usually go into movies like trying to figure out what it's going to be. And for whatever reason, watching this, I was just like letting it kind of wash over me the whole time. And I think that is the way to enjoy this.
Yeah,
because I didn't. And then at the towards the very end, when Justice Smith is at the play place and
oh my gosh,
and is screaming.
And then everything freezes in place. Oh.
Right. And then we get to him apologizing at the end. I was like, oh, okay, shit. Now let me see it again. Let me see it again. Like having, like just fucking letting all that shit go and just watching it and enjoying it for what it was. Because I got all caught up in the buffiness of the show and all of what Buffy made, which is a show I always talk about wanting to rewatch and never do because I don't think I'll like it and I'm afraid of that. Mm-hmm. But great movie. It's probably going to be better the second time around. Anytime Connor O'Malley is in something that is enjoyable, I already know exactly how I'm supposed to feel about him the minute I see him. Which I think is a fun place to be as a, I don't even want to call him as an actor, but a performer. But it's really good. I think it just dropped on streaming
last week. Yeah.
So I'm excited to go through this one again. It's quick. It's like under 2 hours, which equals fast. So this is one that I am excited to give a rewatch to very soon.
Yeah. Speaking of movies that kind of like stay with you afterwards, Evil Does Not Exist. The new movie from the director of Drive My Car is really haunting and fantastic. I highly recommend it. It's a very quiet movie. It's a very short movie too. It's like 90 minutes, about like a this little like town with a very few inhabitants and, like a corporation kind of like comes in and says like, they're going to be making a glamping site in the town that is going to destroy like the water in the town. And the whole time, like as you're watching it, there is another like thought of like, I'm trying to get ahead of this movie. How are like the residents going to fight back? What's going to happen? How's this going to like kind of resolve itself? And when it ends, it's to me, I probably spent the next like 30 minutes just looking up stuff on the internet about like what the hell, what was that? Like how did this just end? And it was a very quiet, sad movie that is very much about like kind of like life in a small town, the influx and repercussions of like a corporation on that kind of life initially, telling like small stories about the people that live there. There's a really great like town hall part, and it's all like awkwardly, you feel very awkward in that you can, the two people who are going to be there, like kind of giving this presentation to like the town, and how they don't have the answers that the town people want them to have. And there's like just these really quiet, like, I don't know how to answer this question right now. We need to get someone else in here to answer this. And being a part of a large corporations in the past, I was like, I've been in meetings like this before.
Yeah,
I know exactly how this is. But
then it turns out that John Krasinski is actually a part of the fracking company.
Oh, God.
All right.
And he was working with Matt Damon the whole time.
Matt Damon the whole time. Exactly. It's really good. I highly recommend seeing it. I think it's streaming now. If it's not, it should be soon. It's very beautifully shot. Yeah, check it out. And just to kind of cap off, I like the last two big ones that we have. We'll talk about those together. So, Pete, what did you think of The Watchers?
I thought it was definitely a movie that was sold on a couple key visuals. That this is M. Night Shyamalan's daughter directed it and adapted it from a book. And there's some like really good visuals in this movie. I just don't think it was ready. At all.
I think she shows really good promise as a director in the way that the scenes that she's able to kind of like put together, the overall just like style throughout it.
Yeah.
But it felt like by the end of it, I was expecting a twist, like a Shyamalanian twist of some sort, and that's on me. But when it does end, I was like, huh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, their escape from the forest is so undramatic and just flat that you're like, okay, so something different and slightly bigger is going to happen after this, that it completely deflates the ending of that, the last 20 minutes of that movie.
Hmm. Yeah.
Cause as I said, yeah, as you said, it looks good. There's definitely promise there. I don't know if she is a writer director. I would love to see her direct something else. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like her dad had the same issues in his career. Like if he has a really, really strong idea to write about, it will work, but you can't do anything. You could probably you could probably direct someone else's very good script. And, you know, it's like, you know, the kind of issue that people have with Alex Garland and say something like Men. I think you have some really strong visuals here, but this is a bad script. And you couldn't fix that doing both of those jobs.
Right. It's funny, like you mentioned, like the escape from the woods and where they're just like, we got to get to the boat. And then like they get to the boat and you're just like, huh, seemed a little too easy. And then there is like that scene, which is like a really good shot of them like watching like the one young guy from like when they're at the boat and like dragging like the dead body and being just like, oh, OK, this is a nice little moment that is going to be terrifying. And then it just sort of.
Because like when stops. She goes into the burrow is looks
that
terrifying.
Yes, totally. And even like the shots from, you know, the camera outside of the door, like there are some really terrifying imagery, which is, you know, a lot of it's in the trailer, but like there is some really good setup and really good atmosphere throughout. I guess I expected this is, yeah. When she's just like, you got to get in here. And then I was like, why did this all happen in the long run? Did the person who initially told her to go to the wood, like, was there something there?
Yeah, that felt like there was something else going on there that just didn't exactly work. And it was kind of mired by like her past trauma. If yes, the female main character in this horror movie had past trauma. Hate to surprise anyone who wasn't expecting that, but I don't know. It just kind of,
it's a little flat.
But as you said, like I like how she films a lot of this. I think there's something there.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Two big ones. Let's start with available now, streaming on Netflix, Hitman, new from Richard Linklater.
We all went and saw this in the theater though, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I've seen it twice. Yeah.
It's a delight.
It's so pleasant.
Yeah. I liked it more the second time than I did the first time.
It so far has the scene of the year in my book. When he goes to her apartment with the notes app on his phone.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, that is good. That's such a fantastically done scene. Oh my God.
And it took me a minute to realize, oh, you planted this early on in the film in such a subtle way in their first meeting when they sort of play along with each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're able to just like improvise with each other. I noticed that the second time around. Me too.
It's not overdone because it's also the, like their very first interaction with each other. So it feels so natural, and it feels like you're kind of in on the excitement that those two actors also show in that sequence. It feels like you're in on that little party. It's so fun. It's a bummer that people might watch this at home and kind of like, if their attention wavers at that point, because it is a pretty like quiet movie. It's not like a laugh out loud like comedy riot.
No,
I thought it was hilarious.
I thought it was very funny at points, but yeah, it's just like light, and I don't mean to say that in a way that like is denigrating.
Yeah,
but it's just like a light, easy movie to watch, and
all compliments.
It really keeps your attention the whole time. It's not doing anything too crazy, but it's just like, I forget how multi-talented Richard Linklater is as a director. And I feel like, who's this guy that everybody loves?
Glenn Powell,
yeah. Glenn Powell is like the perfect young Ethan Hawke type of person. Yeah.
Yes.
Who can do a lot of things. Now, I don't think he'll have the same career trajectory because he's like more leading man good looking. But yes. I think that these two, because I watched Everybody Wants Some a couple weeks ago, like before Hitman came out, or before I went to go see it. And I was like, God, this guy is charming. And I think that Richard Linklater is the perfect pitch for his level of charm. I could see it getting overdone and becoming smarmy and obnoxious in a lot of other writer and director's hands. But I'm like, man, these two can do a lot of good shit together. And this is the first time I've like seen Adria Arjona, if I'm pronouncing her name properly, in something where I thought she was good.
She was so good in this.
Like not just there, but good.
No, like actively good.
Like her role in Morbius when she was present.
Right. Like she was actively a part of why this movie is good.
And her character and like her arc and like the change in her tone and demeanor the whole time, like you just buy the change in the character so well. And like you buy him like falling for her, even though it's very quick. But then that scene with the iPhone where he's like kind of like directing her and like and they're both just having so much fun that you're just like, I could watch this scene over and over again. Oh my God. I really, really like it.
If you're watching it at home and you're not fully locked in and paying attention to every motion and movement of that scene, I think you'll lose what, as I said, for me is the sequence of the year. So joyous and it's so fun. And because as you said, she also plays every bit of the emotion of that scene, still coming off at times like, she's not happy with him.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yep. Even but then she's like enjoying that play and like the outcome of it and the success of it.
Yeah, she's enjoying it, but like you could see that like there's a little bit of like there's something there and then the whole thing wrapping up. Oh God.
Her silent reaction to the insurance policy information.
Yes.
It really just frustrates me that this is a Netflix movie.
I know.
Yeah.
This should not be a Netflix movie. This could have been that like surprise hit of the summer. Granted, it costs $1 million or $8 million to produce, but this is one of those movies that like, what is it? Fucking Tiggs, Greek. My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
You know, one of those movies that like cost very little but stayed in theaters for like 4,000 years because people just thought it was delightful. This movie could have made easily $60 to $80 million if they just put it in theaters and did a platform release, because Netflix, it might do well on Netflix, but there's so many people who won't watch it because it's on Netflix.
Yeah, like me, and
I don't watch Netflix movies because they're bad.
This I haven't watched a Netflix movie in so long, except for Under Paris, but we can talk about that another time.
So this movie premiered at TIFF this past fall, and of all reports, was like the best like theater experience for everyone at that festival. We're saying our crowds loved it. The sequence we talked about like got a standing ovation at a festival premiere, and like people were going nuts about it. And then Netflix paid $20 million for this movie.
Really?
They paid $20 million for a completed film just to throw up on their homepage.
Yep.
And
it's been consistently number one for a while.
Yeah. How does this movie not make $20 million in theaters?
It would have. That's the thing. I think they left money on the table. All right. Maybe 80 is a stretch, but this movie would have made 50 to 60, I think, easily. And 50 to 60 on a budget of 8 with very minimal marketing is a huge margin. That's more than you make. It's like what the dude who won best adapted screenplay, I can't remember his name, this past year, when he was like, stop making $200 million movies. Make $10-20 million movies instead. You will make more money.
The guy that wrote American Fiction?
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, exactly.
You would like, this is a perfect test case. Like, this movie would have made quintuple its budget minimally.
Yeah.
Right.
That's huge. Like,
and the only thing I was thinking was like, did it have the star power to really put out there? But then anyone but you, didn't that make like $70 billion?
Anyone but you made $200 million worldwide. And that was just Glenn Powell.
They just sat there in theaters and was like, hey, this movie that you heard about 3 weeks ago, as you said, it's still there. Oh, I might as well go see it. It didn't leave theaters for a long time.
No, and it consistently made – it was like Titanic back in the day. It just made $10 to $20 million all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to have a box office record. You just need to make decent money. And this movie would have made – I'm confident because – anyone, if it was in theaters, I would have told other people to see it. But it's a movie like this, I'm going to see it and I'm going to shut up because it's going to live on Netflix. And I know I wouldn't watch a movie that someone's recommending that's on Netflix. So why would anyone listen to me? And it's fucking annoying.
I'm trying to look at
it was so delightful. Like, this is based on the way this year is going. This movie's probably going to end up in my top 10.
Oh, this movie is 100% in my top 10.
I thought Retta was great.
Retta's so funny in this movie. The entire crew is so good. When he goes in and has like that first meeting, it's like the story that he tells about like getting rid of the bot is so funny.
Throwing fingers out the window every couple.
Putting the dynamite in the head. So good. And this made $2 million in box office? Like, or no, it's international box office. They don't have the
there's no reporting for this, which is annoying.
I mean, is it because it was only at like the Paris and Alamo and like also like the IFC or the Angelica or something like that? Like, was
possibly. But like, I sat in the theater, like, I don't always get popcorn when I go to the movies. I'll usually just get a drink, if anything. And I was like, this is a have some popcorn and just enjoy yourself movie. Like, I was like, I'm having a classically good time in the theater.
Yeah.
It was so pleasant.
It was such a good movie.
Not a slight. It's fucking really good.
No, first time I saw this letterbox, it was 4. Second time I upgraded to a 4.5. I wonder if the next time will be a 5 because it's just such a fun watch and just something that I am so willing at any given time to just put on.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. And now, Bad Boys Ride or Die.
before we even get started, it just, it makes me fucking sick that this movie is called Bad Boys Ride or Die. It drives me absolutely insane when you made the last movie Bad Boys for Life. How did you get that wrong?
I know.
Just call this one Bad Boys 4, please. Because Ride or Die doesn't mean anything. And if, and 10 years from now, when I don't have as good of a memory, I'm going to think this was called Bad Boys for Life.
Right. Yeah. Could have been Bad Boys Forever. Like, whatever. You know, like, there's some, you could think of a bunch of other words that have the, and then just have it be like the, a new series of Bad Boys that all have the number 4 in there somewhere.
Like, it just drives me fucking nuts. That said, I liked Bad Boys Ride or Die a lot more than Bad Boys for Life.
I don't really remember Bad Boys for Life.
That's the problem. Because it was really long and annoying and boring.
It's the least memorable Bad Boys movie of all of them.
Yeah, I did rate this high. I rated this higher than Bad Boys for Life. I remember nothing about that movie.
This one, that one really, really focused on his team, on the team.
Oh, because he had to blow it out. And
it was, right, for a spinoff and sequel and blah, 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 in case they age out. And it also did that thing of showing us all this shit we never saw.
Yep.
Which I never liked. Yeah, don't introduce history and characters I've never seen, and now you're telling me they matter. Now, his son was a standout because that dude was fucking awesome.
Really good. He was good at this.
So you had to find a way to get that guy back in the movie, which I completely understand. But this time he didn't have to deal with any of the backstory. We got through all that backstory to get to this point.
Yeah, exactly.
I really, and as soon as fucking, what's his name? Ian Gruffudd or Owen Gruffudd, Mr. Fantastic. As soon as that dude showed up on screen, I was like, oh, he's a bad guy.
Bad guy.
It was, and it's so, so nice.
Heavy-handed.
It's nice. Like, I remember, like, all those Bruckheimer movies are so simple. And it's like, I don't have to use any of my brain. I can just watch cool shit, funny stuff. And that be
overly complicated in a good
way. It's not complicated. It's just long and stupid. Well, it calls itself complicated. Nothing it's doing is all that complicated.
Nothing it's doing is all that complicated. Two just ends like 6 times, and you're just like, man, it's time to leave the theater. Wait, nope, still going. Okay.
We gotta go to Cuba. No one can go to Cuba. And then it's like, we got out of Cuba, but not these landmines. Like, it just doesn't know how to stop.
It just went for it. Like,
and
it
this
was
one
like,
is under 2 hours.
Under 2 hours, in and out, like, it's just, watching the trailer for this, I really thought this was going to be awful.
Like, I thought it was going to be a worse version of 3.
Yeah. And then go, like, just getting into it, like, you also, like, being like, oh, well, Joey Pants isn't going to be there anymore, and he was actually really good in these, like, still comes back, has a really good role in this.
You're my bad boys.
Recordings. Yeah. Two recordings.
Yeah, two recordings. Works fine. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. I think that it kind of like you were saying about like having really high expectations going into the TV Glow. I went in with the lowest expectations to Bad Boys, and just it was a delight.
I said, I really, the character of his son works so much more for me. And I think that dude really plays it well in this one. Getting to like have his action be fun, I think really works for him. What was I gonna say? Oh my god, the fact that this movie has the evil henchman has a abandoned gator park amusement park lair, and I'm just like, god. Wanted to stand and clap the first time they showed that. I was like,
oh yeah,
feels so throwbacky, and I love that this movie's absolutely going to end there.
Yes, this movie felt more 1995 than felt like a direct sequel to Bad Boys in a weird way.
Like, it totally did.
It felt so 90s. Like, Bad Boys 2 was a great movie, but Bad Boys 2 is so entrenched in the over the top like excess of the 2000s. And this is like very much a 90s buddy cop action movie.
Yeah,
in the best fucking way.
Yeah, I was worried that Martin Lawrence's bit was just going to be a retread of Tyrese in Fast. Which Fast?
Five one was through
it? Five or Too Fast? Which one?
There was specifically a Fast and Furious movie where Tyrese was obsessed with being immortal. Was that nine?
It might be nine because I don't remember it so super clearly.
I think that was the one where they were joking
about how. Yeah, it might be nine.
Yeah, it's nine because they talk about being superheroes in that one, and that's when him and Tej get into the thing, like the rover basically, and get shot into space.
Yeah, I was worried there was going to be a retread of that, and then when it pivots to him talking about him and Will Smith's past lives constantly.
Yep.
I loved Martin in this movie.
Yeah. He's so funny. And that was my biggest concern was that I didn't again from the trailer, I was like, I don't know if this is going to be funny. I can't tell. Or it's just going to be trying too hard. And then Martin Lawrence killed it.
The third one was so much about Will's tortured past.
Right.
Yes.
When that character was just supposed to be a pretty playboy. And we're forgetting that the first movie is kind of a life swap movie more than an action movie.
Yes, it is. That's it. It's very simple. Yeah. Yeah. Mistaken identity, go.
And I feel like the third one maybe was a little afraid because Martin hasn't been in a movie in so long that they kind of didn't give him a whole lot to do. And after that one, they're like, okay, he can still do stuff. I'm like, the guy is still objectively one of the funniest fucking people on the planet. Let him be funny, but not too crazy, because he still has to be believable as a detective. And let's fucking go. This movie was delightful. Ask me anything about the villain, and I can't tell you a thing. But it doesn't matter. You didn't go to this movie to learn about who Eric Dane was playing.
No.
But it's just fucking fun. They find a way to sort of redeem Will Smith's son's character, who they had to do that because they're like, this character is so good. We have to figure out how to make him work in the future. It's just fun, and it's under 2 hours, dog. It's a good time.
Yeah, and they really sideline the two younger members, Vanessa Hudgens and the tall gentleman, but they sideline them in a way which is not shameful that they're not in the movie as much as three. They get to pop up and have a couple little moments that feel like enough.
Yeah. And there are funny moments. They are there to make you laugh for a second and then go away. And then kind of right at the end, just they saved it right here. And then kind of go away. And they played them just perfectly enough for this and really let Martin Lawrence and Will Smith really just drive it.
Mission Impossible 4 was this might be Jeremy Renner's now.
Yeah.
And then 5 comes out and it's like, yeah, nah, fuck that dude.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner's
doesn't line. Do yeah. that. This does.
He's a dude in a suit now.
I know the third one was like, yeah, these kids might be like bad boy babies, but this fourth one is like, no, they are truly their support.
Yeah. This is making me want to watch this movie again. I wasn't expecting to feel this high about it because it's one of those movies that I thought was pretty good and then I really didn't talk about, and now I'm like, the movie's fun.
Remember the Reggie scene?
It was good. It was that was exactly
what
Martin.
It took us this long to get there is unbelievable.
The two
it's of like them, the best thing I've ever seen.
The two of them play that sequence so well. They really make it work and they keep it so funny. As they're watching that video footage, it's really, really good.
And for him to do the fucking salute at the, I was like,
yeah,
I was dying. And then the coda to all of that at the end at the barbecue.
Oh my God, it was so good.
None of this shit should still be fucking funny.
No.
It's been 30 years. Yeah. None of it's new. Why is it still good?
None of it's new. It's still works for whatever reason. Michael Bay shows up as a disgruntled car driver at one point. He does not look great, nor is he a good actor for the 15 seconds that he's on screen.
He was in the third one. He was at the wedding, right? In the third one too.
Oh, was he? Okay.
And I think he was in Bad Boys 2. He's been in a lot of the Bad Boys driving doing shit. So it's funny that he would come back, but it's just fucking enjoyable.
Yeah, this one probably of all the movies that we've talked about today, this is the one that I've wanted to rewatch the most.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Furiosa twice.
Okay.
The one thing I would say going back to Furiosa, if you want to stay, granted, I really like Furiosa. I gave it 4.5 stars. But if you rewatch Fury Road.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that review.
Furiosa is like a pile of shit. It's really? So it's a bummer that to compare them. I watched Furiosa in theaters, went home, watched Fury Road, was immediately like, Furiosa sucks. Even though then I saw Furiosa again, and I'm still like, man, Furiosa 4.5 stars, really love that movie. And it almost makes me afraid to watch Fury Road again because it's so much better. It's tough to compare those, but yeah, I would say on this list now, looking at it, Bad Boys or Hitman are the movies I want to rewatch the most.
Yeah, I can't wait to having rewatched Hitman recently.
Yeah,
this was the one that I'm looking the most forward to.
And I would say I really got panicked, no pun intended, in this movie when it seemed like they were going to do like a panic attack storyline for Will's character.
Yeah,
yeah.
They don't do that. They like it comes up, but it's like it's not important at all. And I was very happy that that wasn't going to be like a big, like anything that we really had to care about at all.
Not until like the very end, which I thought kind of worked, but yeah. But other than that, yeah, I actually thought that like, from, you know, Martin's like near death experience to like Will's panic attack to then Martin like saving Will. From the, like, I thought that that all, like, I almost thought it was going to be too much about that. And then it all kind of drops. And like, all we care about is like Martin talking about like Will being like was like a llama or something like that in their past lives.
Yeah, it was
and
a llama. Like him being the owner.
So funny.
A donkey.
Yeah. Donkey. That was so, oh my God. I can't wait to see this again.
And like, weird to say for like that $100 million is cheap for an action movie, but this movie was made for $100 million and Will Smith is in it. So how much of the budget is he eating up? Like this movie was I think directed really well for something for like a big action movie. Like this could have easily been $200 million, but they found a way to like keep the costs down. And that's great because now this movie is already profitable 2 weeks in.
Yeah. Do you think, okay, so like not really knowing anything about it, like after the cancellation of Batgirl, do you think that like the thought for the directors was like, we need to get like something out there and just like get it out no matter what, like for as quickly, like let's just like blitz through this thing and get it done. I don't know what like the actual production timeline was for this, but it feels like there was a sense of urgency in like how everything was done in this movie.
Well, I think even and I was like on Instagram, I saw like a little bit of like how they shot the sequence in the Gator Park where it's like the first person shooter
view. The first person view, yeah.
And then it goes back to them. And that was literally Martin and Will like having a camera and turning it around while still shooting. And I was like, holy shit, these guys must have been like, we might not get a chance to make another movie again. So we're fucking going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Because they did the first Bad Boys, they got, because they were just on blank check and they talked a bit about this, and because they got Batgirl and they were almost going to do Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Right.
But then they did Batgirl instead, and then, you know.
Now Axel F, is that going direct to streaming? Is that a TV? I don't even
know. Yeah, that's Netflix.
Okay. Yeah.
Oof. So, never mind.
No. Can't do Joseph Gordon-Levitt in that movie. Yeah.
There's something about it that, yeah, it really feels like they were just trying to throw things in there. And in that episode of Blank Check, they do talk about how Bruckheimer was just like, no, we're going to get you out of movie jail. Don't worry. Like, we're going to give you a shot here. And that, you know what, like, feel like that kind of makes you feel like, all right, I mean, that's kind of cool.
Really, well, because these guys are doing something that not, like, I can't think of another, like, just like guys who could just do an action movie that's kind of fun. Antoine Fuqua can't really do fun. He can do action. He can do very serious action. but there aren't very many people around that can do the that like Bruckheimer style action that's a little funny, that's a little hokey, but ultimately like a really fun time at the theater. I don't know very many directors out there right now that have that skill set. These guys do.
I'm trying to think.
I'm really like, I really can't think of anybody.
Yeah. Oh, anyway. Go
yeah,
see
like
Bad
Ward
Boys
and Miller can do anything, but like they're always going to pitch more towards comedy.
Comedy, exactly.
I mean, this is what I wish Guy Ritchie was doing it a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
That was my issue with what was the name of that movie? Ministry of Ungently Warfare never hit any energy level the way that
it felt like the King, you know, that Kingsman prequel is dog shit and boring and not even like, I don't think those movies are even all that good, but they at least try to have fun. And Guy Ritchie needs to have fun. The Gentleman was fun because he was enjoying himself. And then it's like, he went right back to like dark crime drama action. And I'm like, no, you're better when it's light. Hugh Grant needs to be in your movies. Like, there's certain people that, even Charlie Hunnam, like the first time I've seen him have fun was in The Gentleman. Do more shit like that.
Yeah.
We need that. Like, I like action that's also fun and funny, and not everything has to be this like Jason Statham, like even Wrath of Man, which I don't know if either of you guys saw. It's like so serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't need know that what Guy.
No, definitely not. And it is like, and I think it was like you were saying before, like it feels right out of the 90s. And like when there were movies like The Rock or Face Off, where it was like there is serious things happening, but there's also so much fun happening. Yeah, exactly. Like this is a like, can you believe that we're putting people in this situation? Let's have some fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap this up. What do we got coming up on the docket other than Quiet Place Part 1, whatever it's called?
This weekend is Kinds of Kindness Goes Limited this weekend.
That's correct.
I don't have that. But we got The Bike Riders, the new Jeff Nichols.
Is that a thing to see? I don't even know.
It was supposed to be good, but Disney had it, couldn't figure out what to do with it, fucking dropped it, and then Focus Features picked it up. It was supposed to be like potentially Oscar bait last year. And now I guess they're just repositioning it as like a movie for adults in the summer.
Long awaited Russell Crowe exorcism movie. That's not about the Pope's exorcist.
So annoyed at that whole concept now.
I'm excited for Thelma with June Squibb.
I'm excited for anything.
That's this weekend too, right?
Yeah. Because I like her.
She's great.
Yeah. And then, then it's Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1, a week after that. Quiet Place Part 1. No, sorry. Quiet Place Day 1.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, Part 1 would also be fine.
It's pretty light out there. Even if I'm looking at, like, big movies, small movies, shit I will just go see just to go to a movie, it's pretty light for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what type of business Maxine does coming out July 4th weekend.
I was going to say I want to see what kind of business Horizon and American Saga Part 1 hour
that
one
movie does. It sounds like it's going to fucking tank. Yeah. It's supposedly not at all good.
But didn't they already like do all of them?
Yep, they
one's coming out in August.
Yeah.
Like the part one and part two are back to back almost.
That's crazy. And that's Fly Me exactly, to the Moon, which looks terrible.
Oh yeah, that's an Apple movie.
Yep. But it is also getting a release.
Okay. They do weird shit. I don't know what comes out and what doesn't.
Deadpool Wolverine in July. Twisters.
I think Twisters might be fun.
I'm excited for Twisters. I don't know why, but I'm excited for Twisters.
It looks like it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Spy Eternal City we've got coming out pretty soon.
I like My Spy 1.
I was there too. When they were filming My Spy 2. I have to go. I need to go and see the scene that I was watching get filmed.
All right. Yeah, so I mean, July picks up a little bit. And it would be fine. August seems like it's going to be weird, but we'll talk about it when we get there.
All right.
You probably won't hear from us till the end of July anyway, because some of us have to go on a honeymoon.
Yeah,
I'm
in July as well, so.
Around, so you know.
See if I can go see some movies in Thailand.
There you go. It's good. I mean, seeing like English language movies in foreign countries is usually kind of fun. I've done it twice, so I guess I can't really comment that much. There you go. See if Blue Beetle's playing, and then we can kind of compare the Swedish version to the one that's in Thailand. All right, let's knock this thing out. Let's close the book on this one. I forgot to record. Can we start from the beginning?
Oh God.
You can find us on the web at movemovepodcast.com. You can find Russ on all of the platforms as Russ Incredible. You can find Pete as Pete Peter Petey on Letterboxd. You can find me on Letterboxd and Trauma as Johnny Tiggs. Do I usually say something else after that? I feel like I keep going.
No, maybe we used to talk about the Alex? Fact that we have a show third Thursday of every month at the Creek in the Cave.
Yeah, that's in Austin, Texas now. If you go there, check it out. You know, tell them you want Pig Pile. Let them know. And thank you all for listening. We'll probably be back end of the summer sometime, middle end of the summer sometime, either in August or late July at the very earliest. We will see.
I'll be ready.
All right. Well, yeah, I'll be ready too. So, yeah. Thanks for stopping by. I don't know. That doesn't track. We'll talk to y'all next time on the Movie Podcast.
Y'all come back now, you hear?